from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report. It is the 29th day of November 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. And a bit later in the program, TGM's Matt Bennett will be here to look at the cash grain market. He's from Windsor, Illinois. Along the way today, we'll hear again another installment of In My Backyard from Lisa Bralston. We'll also take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
I'm checking the numbers in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the soft red winter wheat pit finished 10.5 cents lower in the nearby December contract at $9.28¼, and the July finished up at $9.59½. That's down 2¾. Those are both closes and not settlement prices. December contract in the corn pit from Chicago, $8.76 lower. The March at $8.84, down 7¼. And the May at $8.94¼, 3½ lower. July, $8.87½ unchanged, and September, $8.92¾, up 0.75 cents. December corn of next year, $8.99½, up a penny on the day. December, that's actually wheat futures. December corn futures, $7.52½, down 7¾. The March at $7.58, down 6. And the May at $7.58¼, down 3¾. July, $7.49½, down 3½. And September there at $6.58½, down 2¼. December contract at $6.36½, down 3¼. That's what I get for thinking while I'm reading the numbers. January beans now, $14.46½, up a quarter of a day for the day. The March contract up 5 cents at $14.40. The May at $14.19, up 8½. And July, 7 cents higher at $14.08¾. And the August contract in the bean pit, $13.80, up 2¼. November beans, $13.08¾, up 3¾ on the afternoon. Bean meal futures at $4.43.30, they're up $3.40. And the bean oil at $49.80, 31 cents higher on the day. Here's the live cattle from the Mercantile Exchange. February contract at $132.10, 45 cents higher. The April at $135.90, up 55 cents. March feeders at $149.55, up 25. And the April contract, $150.92½, up 37½. Lean hogs in the Febs at 87.12½, 45 cents lower. This is the closing market report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures January contract $87.89 a barrel, up $1.40. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.78¼. That's 4¾ cents higher. Ethanol trading at $2.42¾, down 2¾ cents. And now, the difference between the two is 7 cents wider than it was yesterday at 35¼ cents. Natural gas at $3.65, that's a penny and a half lower on the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.04 a gallon, up 3¾ cents. And the gold futures on the afternoon, $10.60 higher at $1,728.30 an ounce. The dollar at 80.2 is down 0.13 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high near 52 degrees. That'll come on a southwest wind at 11 to 13 miles an hour, gusting to 17. It'll be partly cloudy this evening with a low of 35. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high of 55. Partly cloudy on Friday evening and a low of 40. Mostly cloudy with a high near 57 on Saturday. That south wind continues to prevail at 8 to 16 miles an hour, and it will gust all the way to 22 on Saturday. Saturday evening, a 40% chance of showers. It'll be cloudy, a low of 50. Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 62. Sunday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 52. Monday, mostly cloudy and a high of 64. It'd be breezy. Chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low of 47 on Monday night, and Tuesday partly sunny with a high of 52 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 31. Wednesday, mostly sunny and a high near 38. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour when we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of November 2012. On the phone line from not Mandeville, Louisiana, but this time in someplace in Indiana, Jefferson City, Jeffersonville. Where are you, Dan Zwicker?
Jeffersonville, right across the river from Louisville, Kentucky.
Well, you're looking at the Ohio then, or at least have. How low is it?
Well, we got water here. Ohio is in pretty good shape. The problem, of course, is going to be that lower Mississippi, or I guess the upper Mississippi from St. Louis down to Cairo. That is going to be the tricky one as we go forward. You know, they are limiting the water supply from the Missouri River, but I do understand that Washington is worried about the situation, and they may let more water go in there if they need to, because primarily what they're doing is keeping the reservoirs full for recreational uses. And I think commerce, international trade might take a priority in the long run, but we'll have to kind of wait and see, and maybe and just hope that we may begin to get some rain and get some water going in those areas. But at least at the moment, it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. 60 to 70% of the water flow from Alton, which is where the Missouri dumps into the Mississippi River, to Cairo anyway, comes from the Missouri. So when you take a large part of that river out of the system, it really lower the water flow pretty quickly, I would think. There's another issue there as well, and they're both related, but they're two different issues. The one you talked about with the Missouri River dams, and the other one is simply that the drought has put water levels so low that it's possible now to do a little work on the floor of the Mississippi River in that Cairo to St. Louis range. There are a couple of places where some rock formations, they're calling them pinnacles, are above the waterline and can at this time maybe be blasted out. But that only takes effect, Dan, I'm told, if Congress manages to allocate funds. And I think the cost is about $10 million. And I've seen some estimates suggesting that limiting the flow of traffic along there is a $7 billion process. So it might be worth spending $10 million on. But only Congress can make that decision, and they have to pull the trigger on money.
Well, farmers have got that, I think. About every farmer in the country is a millionaire now.
So. Oh, Be careful. They may be land rich and cash poor. We've heard that one before,
well,
right?
Well, some of them are even oil rich.
Yeah, that's true.
They're getting $500,000 checks from oil down here in southern Illinois.
You're in a different part of
North Dakota. My brother works for an ethanol plant up in North Dakota, and he says they all got so much oil money and commodity money that they just don't even know what to do with it. They're all lottery winners up there.
Tell them we have a job to be done on the Mississippi River if they've got some spare cash that can help clean up.
Yeah, I was going to say that'd be a good investment. Maybe we ought to make the river a toll river, because Washington will never get their act together. I don't have a whole lot of faith in Washington finding $10 million. They're trying to figure out how to keep the government open, I think, the first of the year. So my guess is we're going to take a low priority on that one. But it's definitely needed. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, agriculture, and not only agriculture, all trades, the commerce that goes up and down Mississippi River and Illinois River and Ohio River, is just unbelievable. And if we didn't have those systems, it would be pretty tough, I think, economically.
I was thinking about the potential impact on the farm economy in Illinois, the Missouri, further north of this. And it seems to me that because there's not enough corn available, really, and exports, and you may have a different picture from where you stand, to head overseas, and that which is available from that area is pretty aflatoxin loaded anyway and might not be used, that it's really the fertilizer that would be coming up the river for the next season that would have would be impacted the most by that being closed for a very lengthy amount of time. And one other note on that, it also appears to me, even if they could get started, the earliest they would be finished would be maybe mid-March. So it'll be closed for a while, one way or the other, I think.
Well, right. Well, on the ag front, we don't have much of a corn export book on the books down south. I mean, the export sales have been absolutely miserable because Argentina and the Black Sea supplies is pretty well taken care of all the inventory needs to the world market, at least through the fall. So there's not much export sales of corn on the books. There is a large soybean book yet. So it's going to be difficult to get those soybeans down to the Gulf and get them loaded up. There is rail, but my guess is how it plays out, it could widen river basis levels on corn, but strengthen river basis levels on soybeans, because they're going to try to, because, you know, we'll maybe only load half barges or what it takes. But there's going to be a lot of need to get that soybean inventory down to the Gulf. The big vessels are coming in. They want to be loaded with soybeans, and somehow the market's going to have to bring those beans down into the Gulf to load on those vessels. But as far as fertilizer goes, I guess I would thought, anyway, a lot of the fertilizer companies would already have that on hand. They brought it up during the summer for fall delivery, as farmers, you know, put a lot of fertilizer on in the fall. So, you're right. That could complicate things as we go into the spring.
Okay. Now, take a look at and I know you watch them every day because it's your job, the charts for me. Which are the most interesting formations? Which seem to be changing your mind on the direction of any of the marketplaces, if any of them at all?
Well, I think in the short run, a lot of times, I mentioned this on my Facebook page, that a lot of times when markets rally into a full moon, and yesterday was the full moon, markets have a tendency to kind of record a short-term top. And I think that might have been the case here, at least looking at the way corn and wheat performed today. So I do think maybe wheat and corn, maybe even soybeans, they're all three in a corrective consolidation type situation. In corn's case, what I look at is here on the lead corn futures, if you draw a big trend line down off of the August 10th low connect or August 10th high, and then you connect it to the October 11th high, you kind of had a long downtrend line. We broke above that November 19th, after we posted a little double bottom there during the mid-November time frame, and that was after the election. And I think that decline that we saw in commodities after the Obama reelection was basically hedge funds, all kinds of funds, people taking profits on their positions to take advantage of this year's capital gains tax and income tax, realizing that income taxes and capital gains taxes and all that's going to be higher next year. So I think they printed profit on that, and now they're reestablishing positions, realizing that they'll probably have to pay higher taxes on these new positions, but they took profit on that
right.
year.
So they won't have as many taxes, right?
Right, and now we're back. And we broke out of that pattern there on we broke that above that trend line there on November 19th, and we've rallied all the way up to the 38% retracement level of that fall decline. So a lot of times when a market breaks out of a formation or out of a pattern, a lot of times you'll have what you call as a fallback rally. And I think that is a fallback correction, and I think that's where we're at. We're now going to have a fallback correction. The 50-day moving average sits in here around 744 on the lead futures chart, which is December contract. We could maybe fall back to that point of breakout where we broke out of that day. That was probably in the 740s. So we probably could be vulnerable on deep corn falling back to 740. That would be about a dime down from today's closes. Would be about 750 on March corn. But I think the market will hold and then resume in the direction of the breakout. So for the most part, I still want to kind of have a little friendly bias to the corn market as we go on into the winter months. First part of December, first week of December is usually a time frame when the upward momentum of the seasonal strength kind of catches. So if this is a correction and may last into the first week of December, catch, and then maybe then the uplift then begins as we and goes on higher into the January crop report and maybe into a winter high of some kind. So I think that's the way I look at the corn market. Soybeans maybe they're having a difficult time penetrating this 26% retracement level of the fall decline. Soybeans may be more of a consolidation phase rather than a corrective decline, whereas I think corn and wheat could be more corrective in nature. Soybeans might be more of a consolidation, a period sideways, and then resume the uptrend. So I do think soybeans still have an opportunity to maybe go on up into this 38% retracement level, which on lead option would be somewhere around 1533. On the lead option corn, go back to the 50% retracement level, which would be up into the middle 770s. New crop wheat, I kind of like July wheat. It looks to me like we're going to punch through the $9 level, which is the high we had in early November. And then I think, you know, higher wheat values are coming forward. There's a lot of export interest beginning to pick up in wheat. We had Japan picked up 150,000 tons of wheat overnight. Algeria picked up 375,000 tons of wheat. Thailand's in the market for wheat, and I even think South America is in the market for some wheat. So, and then with the drought conditions in the hard red winter wheat areas, the wheat market is beginning to really perk up here and could be one of the major price leaders through the winter months.
Dan, thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana, Jeffersonville, Indiana today, and tells us all about the marketplace and sometimes takes us through all the charts for the afternoon. Well, up next, we'll hear from Lisa Braltz. She'll visit with a couple that really cooks and has a great sense of community.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
The house Mark Hartstein and Leslie Bettridge share in East Urbana is cute and tiny and absolutely stuffed with food-related ephemera. Wine glasses, rice bowls, utensils. There's a lot to look at. It's also a book-loving gastronome's wildest dream. There are hundreds of cookbooks of every stripe, plus books about eating and food and their place in the world, all over the world. Mark and Leslie have honored many cuisines when they've cooked together, but a big favorite, and this is the S in CUSP, or their year-old Champaign-Urbana Smorbrod project, is, well, smorbrod. Here's a description of what the word means from Mark.
Well, it was a sandwich. Like many proletarian meals, it was a sandwich that could be easily transported with the workers on their way to work and eaten later down during the day. But for some reason or another, the Danes have this affinity for an open face sandwich that they'd eat with a knife and a fork. And it's usually a thick, hearty rye bread that's slathered in butter or lard and then topped with what have you. Traditionally, herring, very big in the herring. Sliced meats, vegetables, mashed potatoes, whatever leftovers were from the night before or from the couple days before.
One of my own food books from the mid-1960s tells me that smørrebrød, and I quote, is eaten for lunch by everyone in Denmark from 9 months to 90 years old and can consist of everything between heaven and earth. Mark and Leslie started researching Nordic cuisine and were taken with the idea of putting their own twist on the idea of smørrebrød and bringing it to local eaters. They would not only use locally sourced food whenever possible, but would purchase foods not locally produced from local suppliers, the next best thing, and the food would look good. These would not be sandwiches smeared with leftovers.
A lot of it is about the visuals. You eat with your eyes first, of course, which is a cliche, but nonetheless true.
One of the many books on their shelves is called Mission Street Food by Anthony Myatt and Karen Leibowitz. It's the story of a husband and wife team who took the concept of a pop-up restaurant, people who cook coming into a restaurant kitchen with permission, of course, and cooking their own thing, often alongside the people who actually own the kitchen. They first borrowed a Guatemalan taco truck and then an actual restaurant once a week to serve their version of street food to food geeks in San Francisco, with a dollar a plate going to support a local charity. Mark and Leslie decided to do something similar, but instead of street food, they were going biking. They started bringing the s'more bread they prepared to an off-site kitchen to the Bouvon Wine Bar in Urbana once a month, and decided to donate a dollar per sandwich to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, a regional food bank in Urbana that serves agencies and programs in 14 counties.
It was important to us to focus our energies on a local charity. First off, it had to be kept local. And second off, it had to tie into what we did for a living, which was cooking. So it was, the inspiration was, we gave back to the community through our avocation.
The CUSP events, which have happened every month for the last year, have been a hit. The area's usual happy eaters, as Mark calls them, are often in attendance. But new faces, including some homesick Danes, have also come by for a taste. Most impressive, though, is what they've been able to do for the food bank. CUSP has given over $2,400 to the food bank over the last year, which has enabled the food bank to acquire $24,000 worth of food for food pantries in the area. Both Mark and Leslie feel strongly that the so-called foodie community is well-positioned to help the hungry in our area by doing what it does best, making great food and getting people together. Leslie.
As people who provide food for other people, I think in a sense it's almost our responsibility to remember and try to help people who don't have enough to eat.
The next CUSP event is in January 2013. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks to Lisa Braltz and to Dave Dickey for their production of In My Backyard. On the phone line with us to take a look at the cash grain market for a Thursday afternoon is Matt Bennett. He's in TGM from Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Yesterday we heard, and I think it perked up with the ears of a lot of folks, that Delphi, the Climbers facility, actually in Logansport, Indiana, had been 35 over. There have even been some unders here in our area and further to the west of us. They were paying $8 at one point this week. How about you? Where do you stand? And did that sound like an awfully good price?
It sounded like an awfully good price, yeah. And we're still running, I'm running about $7.53. I would be pretty much right with the market, maybe a penny or two over, depending on which location you're at. But, there's certainly some areas that are able to bid just a little bit more than others. And I think the disparity on basis levels is just going to grow.
And that'll be based on need locally, I suppose.
It'll be based a lot on need locally. And, as we've talked before, there's going to be a lot of disparity based on quality. You know, low alpha, high quality corn is going to be at some point worth whatever people that need it are willing to pay.
And it means cash is king. And it really means that watching your cash bid is the way to make the market work for you.
Definitely.
Okay. And what do you suspect basis will do over the next week?
Over the next week, I don't see a whole lot of fluctuation. When the bean basis actually is weakened just a hair here in the last week or so, which was surprising to me. But I don't see either corn or beans doing a whole lot for us locally.
All right. Any end your bids for the day?
Like I said, cash corn, $7.53. Next fall, $6.08. Cash beans, $14.42. And then fall of $13, $12.80.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
For today's broadcast comes from a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
It's National French Toast Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1837, John Wesley Hyatt was born. He developed the process for making celluloid, the first synthetic plastic. He also invented a water purifying system, a sugarcane mill, and a widely used roller bearing. In 1863, Thanksgiving was first celebrated as a regular American holiday by proclamation of Abraham Lincoln. By the way, the first recorded Thanksgiving ceremony took place on September 8, 1565, when 600 Spanish settlers held a mass of Thanksgiving for their safe delivery to the New World, followed by a feast and celebration. In 1869, W.F. Semple of Mount Vernon, Ohio, was issued the first chewing gum patent. In 1942, coffee rationing began in the U.S. And in 2006, Texas Republican State Representative Betty Brown filed a bill in the state legislature which would declare Athens, Texas, as the original home of the hamburger. Residents of New Haven, Connecticut strongly objected. City fathers in New Haven say the hamburger was invented there at Lewis Lunch in 1900. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas. Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us is meteorologist Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, I rode my motorcycle into work today simply because, well, it was cold, right? but it's not so bad this afternoon, and looks like I'll be able to do that for a few days, at least this week and maybe next week, too. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, well, certainly through the weekend and into the early part of next week, and temperatures are going to wind up averaging, say, between Sunday and Tuesday, maybe 20 degrees above normal for this time of year, which is really quite balmy, with readings getting up into the 60s. So that's quite a non-December-like pattern for us to look at. And that will continue into next week with very little in the way of precipitation. A few sprinkles maybe Saturday night, then another chance for some very light rain on Tuesday. And then it cools off a bit toward the end of the week, but still remains above normal, still 3 to 10 degrees above normal by the end of next week. So really quite a week for outdoor activities coming up, and it's going to be that way across almost all of the Midwest. You do have a north-south temperature gradient. That means that the temperature changes quite a bit as you move north or south. In this case, moving north, it gets quite cold. And we're looking at much colder air starting to accumulate over Canada while all of this warming is going on in the lower 48. And that colder air will start to seep southward towards the end of next week and then the following week, and we're going to see temperatures dropping well below normal by the time we get to the beginning of the latter half of the month of December. We're going to see temperatures quite the opposite to what we're looking at today. But anyway, warm and dry is the outlook. There is a downside to a lot of this when you're looking ahead at crops. Things are not good for hard winter wheat again. We didn't get good emergence. We're not likely to see very good emergence of the crop in the hard winter wheat belt from Oklahoma northward through western Kansas, eastern Colorado, much of Nebraska, South Dakota being the poorest state with quite a large percentage of the crop showing in poor to very poor condition at this time of year. We have something like 65% of the winter wheat crop poor to very poor, indicating the lack of moisture and the poor emergence, and that extends northward up through North Dakota as well. So we're going to have to get rain, and we're going to have to get it soon. The idea that, so it rains in the spring, the wheat starts to freshen up and starts to bloom and reemerge, things will look better. But no, it doesn't work that way on yields. About 50% of the yield of hard winter wheat is determined before winter dormancy sets in. You can't recover as easily as people might think.
Pete, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, and that wraps up the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.